future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Hey, everybody, everybody. Welcome, welcome. It is Friday, July 16th. I was going to get a little ahead of myself there. 16th. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to that guy filled with so much middle-aged millennial angst that he had to take a three-week hiatus to Utah. That's right, everybody. Sean Kitchen. And we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. We are streaming live on our YouTube channel right now. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit the bell so you know every time we go live. And let me tell you, I'll tell you right off the bat, is that it's going to be a little bit more of a freewheeling show today. We're getting kind of back in the swing of things. And, you know, frankly, we haven't had the opportunity to talk on the podcast for, God, it's what about 5 weeks, Sean?
Yeah,
it's been a bit. So, you know, today we might get into some, I don't know, there's been what's been going on in the news. Oh, I don't know, voting rights, you know, and the filibuster. Or maybe how about the infrastructure and the filibuster? And how about, like, the Trump stories that are emerging about the Secret Service and about, like, compromise coming out of the Soviet Union, right? Oh, who knows? And, you know, while all that's going on, the West is on fire. Part of the East is underwater, right, including Bucks County. You know, so our climate crisis is raging like it hasn't been before. There's that. Of course, right here in Pennsylvania, you've got, like, dark money groups like No Left Turn, like an education, No Left Turn in Education and Freedom Works and the Heritage Foundation, after they astroturfed a rally, right, attacking critical race theory in Harrisburg. And of course, what I found out is that my own school district, good old Pennridge, like, figured into that little rally. Of course it did, especially as candidates for the school board here are making it to the conservative talk show circuit. You know, that's all fun. Oh, yeah.
He also has some great Mastriano stuff.
Oh, there's also some great Mastriano stuff as he continues to make a name for himself. Oh, yeah. And did I mention that they voted to consolidate the kind of six posse schools into two on a unanimous vote from the board? Board of Governors, despite the overwhelming kind of comments to the contrary? Oh, I don't know what we'll talk about today. Oh, but, you know, then maybe in today's last call, we'll talk about some more fun stuff. I got some cool news from Notch Brewing about a new collaborative that they're working on. I'm wearing today, I don't know if you can kind of see it, it's this anti-sexist, anti-racist, pro-equality beer club shirt that was produced through, you know, I forget the name of the place right now. I was looking for it before the show, but it's on the back. It says hashtag NYC Brewing or NYC Brewed. And it's part of, in San Diego, there's a kind of, the original kind of came out of San Diego, and they're being used to raise money for Brianne Allen, who is the woman from Notch Brewing, who kind of got this whole kind of latest ball rolling on the reckoning around sexism, misogyny, racism, bigotry in the craft brewing industry. So I'll tell you a little bit about that. There's also some stuff for Legal Defense Fund. We also had Billionaires in Space this week. And, you know, I've been doing some cold brew. And I'm curious about what you're all saying, what you kind of think about, those of you who are out there might know about this or not, about this browser called DuckDuckGo I talked on the podcast a few weeks back, but I've been using it since then. I'm really thrilled about it, but I'm curious what other folks think. So these are the kind of things that we got going on today. I want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in on Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbeans, wherever you get your podcasts. And, like, if you haven't already, I don't know where you've been, but you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. The PA women stirring the cauldron behind this podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. Make sure you follow them on Twitter, too, at the Night Caucus. And, of course, got to give a shout-out to the good folks at The Game Inn, right? For all you gamers out there, The Game Inn with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show. They got everything from retro N64s, the latest consoles, video games for all platforms. loads of collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, and kids get discounts with every A on the report card. Check them out on their Facebook page. Follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn, again with two N's, at The Game Inn. You got a question, you're looking for a particular game or console, you can also drop them an email at TheGameInn2Ns, TheGameInnPA@gmail.com. And a special shout out, as always, goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him at Twitter at SongOfDayMan on Twitter. It's at SongOfDayMan with two N's on Twitter. And just a little bit of note on this. Usually I have the music playing underneath underneath this intro. I kind of cut it a little bit short today because if you remember, the last time we were on, we had a little issue with, again, the music kind of coming in and interfering with the sound of the microphone. And so right before the show, Sean and I were talking a little bit and there were some issues with kind of him hearing stuff on microphone. We weren't sure where that was coming from, where that originated for. So there, Sean will be right back. He's got a package. also want to give a shout out. We had a new patron on Podbean. Right. So if you recall that most of it, you know, if we're looking to kind of support the show, you can go to patreon.com/RC Press. But our original move towards a kind of membership based or patron based program was through Podbean, because we broadcasted live on Podbean. We were, you know, that's where our podcast is primarily hosted, even though you can get it on Anchor, you can get it on Spotify, you can get it on Apple Podcast, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast, you can get this podcast. And you can get the Wednesday show with Cyril Michaleko, and you can get out to Coop Live, our Monday call-in show and interview show. But they have a patron program there too as well. And we slowly shifted away from that to the, look at that box he's got. We slowly shifted away from that to the, for Patreon. But we just had another $5 member kind of come on through, Podbean this past week. But it's an anonymous one, just the strings of numbers and letters. That is kind of what Podbean assigns. So whoever you are out there, I want to thank you for jumping on, for, becoming a patron to this show at the $5 a month level. Cause look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/RC Press. Right. You know, ever since we got rid of Trump, right, the question is like, are we done? No, right? This is just the beginning. Because look, if we want a progressive future, we're going to start building it now, as people have been doing. We're here for the fight, but we need you. All right. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement, the media. Become a patron for those $5 a month by going to patreon.com/RC Press. And look, if you're listening to this on Podbean, and Podbean is where you get your stuff, you can always hit that little green become a patron or the patronage button at the top of the screen too as well, and you can help support us through Podbean as well. And if you're not ready to become a member, but you got kind of a little extra in your pocket right now and you feel like you want to give us, throw us some support, you can give us a one-time donation by going to paypal.me/RC Press. That's paypal.me/RC Press today. Well, Sean, I gotta say, that was one heck of a package that you just had come.
Yes, it is. It's more camera gear.
More camera gear. There you go. Great stuff for the we can unpack. We can do an unpacking for today's last call.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Well, look, more important, like it's great to see you again, man. Kind of welcome back, and well, I mean, I guess you've been back longer than I have.
I think the camera gear is more important.
But
it's great back.
Like, okay. Camera gear is more important. Sean's like, let's do the unpacking now.
No. I was gonna say it's great being back. It's been like 5 weeks since I've had any of my calls on Friday, so you know, getting back into the swing of things. Not much happened here in Harrisburg, so yeah, had a fun vacation.
Hey, what's that?
So I had a fun vacation.
Dude, man, I saw, I mean, some of the freaking photos you were posting were just kind of astonishing, and just kind of like, you know, we talked a little bit, you know, throughout the break a little bit about some of the stuff you've been doing, and it sounded like it was freaking amazing.
Yeah, no, it was pretty fun. Yeah, we drove out to Colorado. We went to Colorado Springs, which is very conservative,
to say the least. I mean, yeah. Conservative. Like, did you have a Coors while you were there?
No. We went to Went to like one of the amphitheaters. One of the like Red Rocks, like one of the rock amphitheaters out there. that you can hike through, and just like the fucking conversations people were having there on the trail about like loving Jesus and being a follower of God and stuff like that. Just like saying stuff that you wouldn't be hearing like anywhere else, like on the East Coast. Like, you know what I mean? Just like, and multiple conversations, like the evangelicism has like definitely has a stronghold out there. So that was fun. We went down over to Durango, drove through the Rockies, went into Utah, Arizona, Moab, Bryce Canyon, went to some of the, hit a bunch of parks. No, it was a great trip.
Yeah, I said I have friends who are looking for their next round of national park trips. They just went out there too as well. They went to like Glacier National Park, did some stuff up in that area. And I said, oh boy, I'll get the list for you from Sean, because some of the stuff that you did. Hey, you gotta tell folks though about like what was that one trail called? Like the Angel's Death, or is it like you know,
Angel's Landing?
Find your way to your own demise path trail. Is that what it was?
So while we were in Bryce Canyon, this is one of the things I've been wanting to do for like years. I had a high school teacher who got me into like the outdoor stuff, like in that when I was that like age, rock climbing and stuff like that, hiking. You know, I grew up in the Scouts, so, you know, just helped move that along more. And like he was talking about like Angel's Landing, like when I was back like a senior in high school, talking about like the trail and like what it was like. Yeah. And exactly what he was talking about back then. The only difference between now and then is like back then it wasn't as heavily trafficked. Now it's like jammed up all the time.
Yeah.
But it was an awesome trail. So like for the setup is, you know, we're staying at the lodge. So it's a half mile to get to the trailhead from the lodge. And we're staying in the park. So I decided to just wake up at like 7:45 and fuck it, I'm going hiking. We did this today and not like, because I was going to wait. And I was just like, fuck it, I'll just get over with like now. So it was really nice. The first like mile and a half, 2 miles were, the first 2 miles was literally just like switchbacks going straight up the canyon wall. And then the last half mile is like, you know, we're scrambling on a rock face, like with 1,000-foot drops on both sides. It was awesome.
Like, I mean, but, it looked like, I mean, like the trail, I mean, how long was, how wide was the trail at that point at the top?
So the trail starts off like, so the trail, when you're going onto it, you get up this canyon, you're on the overlook, which is where like most people will stop. This is like the most dangerous trail in the country. 13 people have died. 14 people have died there since 2000, like falling off. But that's a different story.
You made it.
No, because a lot of people who fell off, they're not falling off during the hike. They're falling off fucking around, taking pictures and stuff like that.
Yep,
like,
yep.
So like, but the trail, so like get up to the top, you start off first, you gotta go up like there's chains set up all along the rock face, so you're like you're scrambling on the side of a sandstone rock, which was pretty fun. You had a chain, and then you get to the second part, which is like the spine of it, and when you drop down and it goes back up, that part is like 8-9 feet wide with like 800 to like 1200 foot drop offs on both sides of you, and it's just like,
I'll tell you from the pictures, because like after I saw some of yours, I like watched online, it looked like it was even more narrow than that.
So some of the camera angles are pretty bad, like that people are posting. Like I felt pretty comfortable up there. Like it was pretty much like that spine was just like flat sandstone, so it was just like, I mean, there were parts of it like we had to go through crevasses within the rocks, like because you just had to like squeeze through.
Yeah.
Parts when you're stepping up like to like the next rock face or the next like ledge, the next stone is up where your waist is at, so you're stepping up like that high. Yeah, like it was a full body workout getting up there. But no, like once we got up to the top, the view was just like spectacular. Definitely like worth it. One of the coolest things I've ever seen. And even like going back on it, I think like, look, even it was a few weeks ago, like it's still just like, holy shit, like I actually did that. Like that type of feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, Bryce, Bryce Canyon, Zion. Well, Zion Canyon was really nice. Like, I've been to Bryce and the Grand Canyon, and I would definitely put like Zion behind the Grand Canyon. It's like some of the best parks I've been to.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
like even going to Yosemite and Yellowstone.
You put Bryce at the top.
No, I would say Bryce is probably like fourth on the list.
Oh, gotcha.
Bryce is really nice for what it is. And it's a really great park. You can do it within a day and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we did a 20-mile hike and then like a 6-mile hike within a day and a half of getting there and leaving. I would say Zion is just like awe-inspiring.
Yeah.
Almost like going to Yosemite, like seeing Yosemite Valley, like the valley floor and everything. But yeah. like seeing just how the stones are and just how wide and open it is. And then also like seeing what it was like from the top, the Angel's Landing was awesome. Like there's still more I want to do there, but yeah.
So. Nice man. Fantastic. So
how was your trip?
It was, I tell you, mine was like, it was like unplug, right? I literally like this time I was like, you know what? I'll bring a computer, right? But I'm gonna stay off it as much as possible. I read 3 books, you know. I was in the ocean with my kids like multiple days. So I had some great waves down in kind of like the Wildwood area or kind of south, you know, the Wildwood Crest, Diamond Beach area is kind of where we were down in. But it was really awesome. We were lucky. We got to bring one of my son's friends with us for the first part of the vacation. He came from the Game Inn, right? The family of the Game Inn. And he came with us for the first week. So that was great. Usually he's down there and he's like, he's 12 going on 13, right? So he's at that point, like, it's like you can't parents like don't want to be with the little kids, right? So I'm by myself. But so that was really great. Everybody was, I think, ready to decompress, which was awesome. So got to spend some time with family. And then for the second week, it was just like my immediate family. And so it was just, it was really nice, right? We haven't been someplace all together. My wife has had to, we've been working so crazy for the past year. So, I mean, that was awesome just to be kind of out and about, going on some bike rides. Where we were down there, there was the sand sculpture competition was going on there. We went and kind of checked that out. It was freaking amazing, sand sculpture. It was like, we took a bike ride, like down, it took us like, a 15-minute bike ride, go out, walk on the beach, look at sand sculpture, stuff like this. And then towards the end, we went on I've never been on like a dolphin watch before. But we took a boat out, kind of like a not tiny boat, but a smaller boat. Wasn't one of the kind of massive ones that goes out. And that was awesome. The guy who ran it was, got lots of good information about dolphins, about the area, about the geology, the ecology of the area. And my son and my wife tend to get like seasick and car sick and things like this. Nobody got seasick or car sick, right? My son towards the end was a little bit out, but we got to see these dolphins. It was just amazing. And, stuff like that. It was just like, it felt good. Just, as corny as it might sound, but it felt good just to be like, even like sitting out in the little deck or out of the thing and just kind of having the sounds of the ocean and the ocean air coming in,
Yeah, I know. That's how I felt. Like, like being able just to sit back. I mean, we went to Monument,
yeah,
which is pretty awesome. Seeing Monument and being able to just like sit there, smoke a vape.
With sage, of course, right? Because
yes. Yeah.
Desert sage.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I mean, like, it sounds like your trip was a lot less stressful than mine. Mine was just stressful because I was the designated co-pilot the whole entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we ended up driving 6,000 miles across the country.
Yeah.
But it just felt good, even like how like tiring that was. It felt good like just to decompress like with this past year and a half. Like, and just like, yeah.
Yeah, I said on Monday show, Out to Coop Live on Monday, I did kind of like a version of what we're doing here today, kind of just more talking about some stuff. Didn't have any guests. It reminds me, it was a good reminder, I think, for me of how important it is to just kind of do the self-care stuff once in a while, right? I don't think I recognize, my wife will tell you this, I don't think I recognize how like constant work I tend to be, right? That's kind of goes to my default thing. And by work, I don't mean like just Kutztown University, like where I teach, but I mean staying up on the politics, working on kind of like what am I going to do for the podcast, reading about stuff with all that kind of like focus. And it's important to kind of, I do think it is important to kind of take a step back once in a while when you can. I mean, because there's most of the time, I think it feels like it doesn't feel like you can step back because there's so much going on.
It was funny. So like the day we come home, the day we're traveling home is the Monday when Sandy Wire gets arrested. So I wanted to like just bring this in. Like this.
There you go.
I literally just like, it like there was that Monday and it was just like my phone's blowing up.
Everybody who it is. Yeah.
Sandy Wire is the lady with the fucking rat's nest on her head showing up to all of the reopen rallies. All of the reopen rallies, the Stop the Steal rallies, the anti-vaccine rallies, the audit the vote rallies, like just showing up to everything. I'm pretty sure she was a bus rider from Mastriano. I'm not sure, but she took the bus down to, she's been down to DC on the 6th. And I have pictures of her. I have a really good photo of her with Mastriano in the background with her audit the vote shirt on and her hair. But so a couple of the things that like, she got arrested that Monday, turned herself in. But she was in the Capitol lobbying the Republican leadership for vote audits that whole entire week out of Mastriano's office. So she was in the Capitol that Friday before she got arrested, knowing she's going to get arrested. Because Roxbury explained, like, when you know you're getting arrested by the FBI, they just don't show up at your door and arrest you. Yeah, they do that most, but most of the time, you know, like, you have to turn yourself in on this day. Like you're being arrested, you're getting a letter,
right?
You're getting notified in the mail. So like most likely she knew she was getting arrested and was still fucking showing up to the Capitol with this vote audit stuff, and just shows you how brazen these people are.
Well, look, and I think it's only getting worse. Well, yeah. Like here's the thing, you know,
I only want to talk about that part right now, but I mean, like, I guess we can go back to it, but so we'll get back to that part in a second because it is getting worse. And I've been thinking about this, like, these people just don't give a fuck.
Right. Exactly.
They just don't care. So my phone's blowing up all day. I'm talking to a reporter, telling them just some background information on Sandy. And they're like, yeah, so where were you at the past few weeks? Stole my vacation. Told them, I was hiking Angel's Landing. And they're also like into the outdoors. So they knew exactly what I was talking about. I'm just like, oh man. So you just went from like, spending the past year tracking all these right wingers, fucking around Mastriano, doing all this stuff, to then just like go and do like one of the most dangerous hikes in the country with no sweat. I'm like, yeah, pretty much. I'll do it again without thinking. He's just like, that's awesome. Like, it's like, what a way to just like unwind and get away from things.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like, even like that day, just getting back, like Sandy Wire stuff, like getting back into the saddle with that. And yeah. So,
well, you know, I talked about this a little bit before the, I don't know if you want to get into this now, but it's like, you know, we, you and I were talking about a little about this before the show is like, in different ways about, you know, how it's difficult. I mean, well, one of the things we had, to chat about is like, you know, one of the things that's going on right now, it's like, you know, like the world's freaking on fire. You know, it's like, I mean, literally the West is like on fire. We had like record heat waves that are kind of like 112 degrees that are in like Portland, Oregon, which is like unheard of, right? It was hotter in Portland than it was in Texas. You have these huge kind of like torrential downpours, you know, these kind of like, you know, like kind of stalled out. Right.
Oh, like literally like 5 days after we left Zion or Bryce.
I was just thinking this.
There was a flash flood like that had to close the park down. But no, I mean, like, when we were in Arches, there was a forest fire going over in Utah, on this like on the LaSalle Mountains, which were like 25 miles south of Moab itself, and you could see the smoke, like literally like the photo, a couple of photos I got, the one with the sunset of the mountains in the background, and then like that sand structure in the forefront, the rock structure, like you can see the colors coming out of the smoke coming like off the mountain. Got a couple photos like from with my other lens, you can like zooming in and you can see just like the smoke streaming off the sides and just like filling up the valley. The same thing when we were in Canyonlands, all that smoke was just covering up the canyon. It was raining a little bit that day, so it gave like an orange glow. But yeah, no, I mean, it was fucking hot. We were in Durango. It was like 92, 93 degrees. Wasn't that bad. But the people there, like, it never gets as hot.
Yeah.
Like, and they don't have air conditioning the way we do. Because you go outside, like, it's 92, 93 degrees during the day. It's hot. But nighttime,
it gets cold.
It's
well, like not cold, 50, but right.
It's like 50.
Right.
55, like 60. It's actually, like, pretty good. So,
well, I remember this is true. I remember in Taos, New Mexico, for example, where I kind of spent a little time, like, you know, you have a lot of kind of like the adobe structures that are up there or kind of like adobe-esque, right? Not there's the original ones, obviously, but then there's one that's built in there. And that's what it's, you know, there's no air conditioning because, you know, yeah, it'll get super hot, like at time, not even super hot, but like in the 90s and things like this during the day, but then it cools way off, right? You just kind of open up all the windows, let all that kind of like cool air come in. And, you know, the structure kind of holds in the cool, you know, for a good chunk of the day. So, you know, and but that's it. You know, and I was also looking at that, you know, where you're out there too, there were like fire restrictions, right? Campfire restrictions all throughout Zion National Park, like all throughout this area because of the extreme drought that's going on. And I think that the way that you put it was something like, you know, it's like a little bit kind of like, say, disconcerting, right? Or a little bit, I can't remember the word that you used, but
the cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, like, the cognitive dissonance.
Just
of it,
like
yeah.
The expansion that's going on, the not even like the expansion in the traffic, but like in the Rockies, like there, like the places between Colorado Springs and Denver are filling it. Like that, just like development, it's still going on. It's just like as like the fucking snowpack is disappearing behind you, or the glaciers are disappearing on the mountains, like right where yep. like this shit's like going. It's just like. It's just so like polarizing. You're not like seeing that, and then just like driving through the mountains was pretty fun. Like we drove through like US 160 through Durango, you know, from like Pueblo and like through southern Colorado, and that was awesome. But no, I mean, it's just like it's seeing like all this expansion out there. And then also, like, one person was talking about, like, there's this really libertarian guy sitting next to us on one of these train rides. We talking about, like, Lake Mead drying up. And he's like, no one's talking about this. This is the biggest story no one's talking about. Like, Lake Mead is, like, in its lowest levels, like, through in years. The water is so low in Hoover Dam, we're not even producing power.
It's something.
Yeah. I mean, like... And how much of this is climate change? Yeah, a lot. And also, like, how much is this is, like, the our ever-expanding developments and people wanting fresh lawns and golf courses? Like, you can't have this life of luxury anymore because of climate change, and you're now compounding the water problems that are going to be happening in the Southwest. I mean, the Southwest is going to be inhospitable.
Yeah, right, right.
In a few decades.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it and, you know,
unless like major things happen now, like major restrictions on water usage, like I don't even know if that can help, but like, okay, no golf courses, no like green lawns, no pools, like just cut that stuff out,
right? You know, and everybody, you know, well, not everybody,
I mean, we're gonna hit that point sooner or later.
Oh yeah, look, I mean, it's we're already there in so many ways. I mean, you know, again, you know, like with people, when you see people talk on like the news or even say general conversations, they're saying, okay, this is all, you know, this is going to happen. Right. But it's not like, you know, this moment of climate change is not going to be like flicking on a light switch or flicking off a light switch, however you want to put it. Right. It's going to happen in these kind of like these spikes and valleys, like any kind of climate change has happened. It's like, you know, you're going to get these moments like right now we have kind of like historic droughts. Right. We have historic wildfires, unprecedented heat in the Northwest. You've got these kind of like
hot as fuck right here in
right,
the Northeast.
With these kind of like, you know, we've seen this
stretching
now.
Like rainstorms, like almost like
right
storms you would expect if you were down in like Florida.
Exactly.
Rains for 20 minutes, you get 3 inches of rain.
I mean, that just, you know, that happened. I don't know if you saw this up in Germany. The same thing happened. Like, they don't get these kind of rains there. You have these, like, enormous, like, you know, in northern Germany, and then it kind of moved down to southern Germany. Just these kind of, like, these, they call them training storms in some cases, right? Where you basically have this line of, I think it just kind of rides up the quarter of a front because a front has stalled out. So you got all this unstable air, and it just kind of keeps on going one after the other. And then a short period of time, they got 6 inches of rain, and they, like, just freaking, like, tore up the towns. You know, so this is, you know, and I look, you know, I said we went on this dolphin watch, and one of the things that, you know, the guy who was talking about, it was, you know, just, you look at, you know, if you look at any map and you look at the Jersey Shore, I mean, the Jersey Shore, it's like, you know, you're on this little kind of sand island, right? You know, it's like a barrier island or kind of thing where, you know, the beaches are, you can see the impacts of it. This is the second time that we've been down there, like in as many years. And a tropical storm has been there, right? So we had a tropical storm run through, right?
Yeah, I mean, I forgot about this past weekend, the remnants of that storm.
Yeah, exactly. And it ran up. And, you know, one of the things they said on the Dolphin Watch was that, you know, the way that there's these jetties that come out kind of in between, like, the Wildwood section and the Cape May section of the Jersey coast there in southern Jersey. And north of the jetty, right, what's happened, these currents are kind of increasing, and it's kind of like sand is all piling up. And again, this is part of this is natural. When you build a jetty, this happens on the north side of a jetty, or kind of like, you know, the upstream side of the jetty. It comes down and it kind of, the sand starts to build up. And then on the south side, right, and the Cape May side, the sand starts to get washed away, right, because there's no jetty to stop it on there. And they're saying how that process has been increasing. Right. So it's normal to see that happen. Well, quote unquote, normal to have that happen. But now where Cape May's losing 2 inches of sand, kind of like a year now, of their beachfront, that's kind of rapidly increasing as you're seeing the, you know, the increase of tropical storms and hurricanes kind of running up here about with these torrential downpours. It's all exacerbating this stuff. And so you're kind of sitting here like in the midst of this awe of, you know, this like dolphin family, you know, his little baby dolphin going on and kind of like coming up, and my daughter like jumping up and down like she's so excited, she just can't believe she's seeing this stuff. And then you're in this, you know, at this moment where it's like, yeah, this is, you know, this is all in jeopardy. You know what I mean? It's like, it's
this... I know, I had the same feelings like out in the Southwest, just, yeah, like driving through and just like, yeah, I might be like, you know, might be like one of the last chances in my life to go out here, but also like might be like one of the last generations of people to enjoy seeing the stuff in that part of the country. Like, yeah, like the structures will, like, you know, Grand Canyon's not going anywhere. Like those places aren't going anywhere, but like the way our way of living will be.
Yep.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, will, yep, Moab be inhabitable in 30 years? Like, or other towns? Like, it's just like, it's, no, I mean, it's just like driving out there, just like, wow, I might be like one of the last like generations of people actually be able to see this stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. So yeah, so we can bring it dark pretty quickly, everybody. We're back. What's so, okay, so let's just go a little,
I mean,
a little...
No, but it's hard not to think about this stuff when, yeah, you're seeing this, yeah, like, you know, you're seeing like all these, the mountain just getting like black from the fires and shit like that. But so how much is that natural or not? But yeah.
And I look, and I recognize, I recognize, like I said this to you before the show too, is like, I made a very, very conscious effort not to go the doom and gloom route while I was on vacation. And as I, you know, cause I'm all this stuff is happening in my head, you know, as I'm looking out at these, you know, just, you know, even just sitting by the ocean, like in the evening, right, as the sun's going down, and just kind of like letting the sound, the ocean, the wind and all that kind of stuff, all this stuff is kind of there all at the same time, you know? I mean, it's like these really contradictory, conflicted, and kind of like, you know, like wide-ranging sets of emotions about that experience. And, you know, while I don't want to kind of just go to the doom room, I know how it could make it feel like helpless or whatever. But I think the point there is, this is part of, you know, our state of being now. And I do think that there's something that can be, say, liberating to a certain degree when we're all in this and we're recognizing this stuff and saying that, you know, this stuff is important to fight for, right? There is grieving that is part of this process, but there's also that saying, you know, all the more reason to, you know, step up and kind of save this stuff. And, you know, not to make too of an abrupt kind of transition into just like a little bit of politics for the day, but, you know, this is one of the things with this, you know, this infrastructure bill right now that's happening in the nationwide, like, you know, they're trying to do it through the, well, not even bigger than infrastructure, but they're trying to do this through, like, through the reconciliation, right? There's, you know, look, there's the bipartisan nonsense, which is about like filling potholes, right? I mean, there's that one that's, you know, getting all this press, but basically what Bernie Sanders has been doing, working on with Biden.
Right? The PRO Act got into the infrastructure bill or into the budget. Did you see that this week?
No, I did not.
Yeah, they're gonna put the PRO Act into reconciliation, into the budget bill. Hmm,
interesting.
Because it will have an adverse effect on the NLRB.
Interesting.
A budgetary effect.
I missed that. See, this shows you where my head's been.
Thank you to Connor in our group chat. Connor works with the Strike Wave. But yeah, so I think the PRO Act might be something to watch for. But I think Bernie made the announcement of that this week.
Yeah. Okay. I missed that part because I know it's like I saw the announcement of those $3.5 trillion kind of reconciliation bill, and you know, Sanders has been out with doing a bunch of kind of interviews on this stuff, and one of the most critical aspects of what's in there has to do with the climate infrastructure. Right. I mean, it has to be with, this has got to be about the just transition, right? This has to be about kind of setting up, say, the economy or our infrastructure for climate change, which is happening as we speak. And you've got, you know, of course, this goes right back to the whole kind of Manchin and Sinema stuff. And Manchin comes out and basically says, I'm really disappointed about all the climate stuff that's in this bill. And basically kind of trying to make, you know, insert himself in there once again to say that, you know, he might be willing to vote against it in reconciliation because there's climate stuff in there, when the climate stuff is what's absolutely critical, you know. And so you have got these two interrelated problems. Number one, you can't get a kind of clean bill that goes through the kind of the regular session where you can actually make it a kind of fully coherent bill. You have to do this kind of Senate maneuver through reconciliation to do this, and you can't do it through the regular business. Why? Because the Democrats refused to get rid of the filibuster. Joe Biden made this big speech in Philadelphia last week, and he said, "Hey, we must defend voting rights," but didn't say one freaking word about the filibuster. As a matter of fact, when he was asked by reporters afterwards, "What about the filibuster? You want to get rid of the filibuster?" He like makes some lame ass joke about saying like, "Oh, I'm not filibustering now," and then walks off. Right. I mean, unless that filibuster is gone, this doesn't happen. And that's also true. It's been playing out with voting rights this week. I mean, one, you go from the national ticket to seeing this, like, again, no way any bill is getting through unless you get rid of the filibuster. And then, you know, there's these kind of maneuvers to try to make a carve out just for voting rights. But again, it just, like, it's the same principle. You want to have the fight. And then you have right here, like in right down to Pennsylvania, in our own backyards, we see like everything ramping up, start looking for like every which way to go about kind of destroying voting rights. So it's like, it seems like that, you know, these things I don't think it's hyperbole at this point to say that we're seriously watching a process where our democracy is in serious jeopardy about
and
being
the Democrats
able to
are more concerned about the Democrats are more concerned. I was listening to David Sirota on our drive out. He was on, I think, like that Friday
on the Majority Report.
Yeah, yeah, he made like a really good point. Like, he said, like, the biggest lie in Harrisburg, or not Harrisburg, in Harrisburg as well, but like in DC, is this notion of bipartisanship. Like, no, like 70% of Americans support voting reform. 80% of Americans support this infrastructure bill. You know, X amount of Americans support, you know, raising minimum wage. Like, majority popular bills supported by everyone in every political spectrum, that's bipartisan. Like, bipartisan.
That's exactly right.
Bipartisan isn't fighting over like the 50th vote or finding 10 senators.
Exactly.
So you can have like this like photo op or like seem important. Like, that's not bipartisan.
No.
That's just performative politics.
Well, but it shows you your limited, like, what your perspective on the world is, right? You're thinking about bipartisanship. They're thinking about bipartisanship in terms of the people who are existing within the Senate.
Yeah, right. The people in that room.
Right. So I think about it like this. Again, here's I said this on the show a few weeks back, but I'm going to say it again. Some free political consulting work on my part once again. This is how you do things. If you're a progressive right now about what going out there, you want to kind of deal with this kind of bipartisanship. What you do is you go out and you kind of like have these events around particular issues. Right. And like, let there be Republicans, registered Republicans, Democrats, independents in the crowd. Right. And then when you find out that they're there, they're supportive of this stuff, you highlight their stories and say, this is the real bipartisanship, not this nonsense that they're talking about on the national news, because people, this stuff matters to people. And when you start going around and talking about those issues and organizing right that and shifting the narrative around, what are we talking about when we mean bipartisanship? Right. It's not enough just to say like, well, no, they're not talking. No, no. Then let's do it here. All the polling shows that the vast majority of these policies that are being pushed by progressives are super, super popular, and they're going to make significant differences in people's lives. So you got to get out with people to do this shit, because what's happening in D.C. and like any other, you know, give me any of your freaking civility caucus in whatever state or locale you're in. You go, like, as Cyril and I on the Wednesday show said this week, you know, you took the quote from the miners who were on strike down there in Alabama, who said, like, this playing nice shit ain't cutting it. Right. Because it's not right. So I don't know, man.
Yeah. Do we want to wrap it up and just go into like
the
other stuff?
Well, yeah. Why don't you go talk about Trump?
Yeah. I mean, like, out of all the fucking Trump stories that came out over the this past couple weeks, the one, the really shocking one, not shocked. Well, yeah, it's shocking because it's shocking and not shocking at the same time.
Right.
It's shocking because this is still being allowed and with, like, we're still like fucking letting Trump do what he wants,
right?
And like, there's just no accountability to him whatsoever. The fact that he like bilked $50,000 or is just like forcing the Secret Service agents to stay at Trump hotels so the Trump organization can make money off of it, like, as it's like under criminal investigation and as like Weisselberg just got indicted, like, as like, you know, like your key people in your family. The family. are going down. This motherfucker is like still is still bilking the government, and they're allowing him to do it. Like, that right there is just like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
I think the Secret Service will always be happier if they get to stay at my hotels.
It's and like, it's one thing after another this week too as well with these.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's one thing after another. The book that came out.
Yeah.
I think that's those accusations just like, it makes me like want to actually read the fucking thing.
Well, this is the one that you're talking about, the book that came out about the coup thing, right?
Yeah, about the attempted coup. This makes like,
because there were a couple books that just came out that were both the same. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but I normally don't get caught up in like this type of hype with these books.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, this makes me actually like want to like just bang it out and get it over with, like, you know what I mean? Because this is just like what the past 6 months of my life has been. And then also, like, we hit the fucking 6 month anniversary part of the insurrection this month. Yeah, while you were on vacation. But it's also like how it just came and went. There's no one.
Wow.
Like, there's just been no commission yet.
Yeah, just so people know, that book that Sean was talking about, that was by Washington Post reporters Carol Lenig and Philip Rucker, and the book is called I Alone Can Fix It, right? That's the one where we get all the quotes have been following for this week about the generals who basically said, yeah, we were preparing for a coup. So we're not to do the coup, but to prevent stop the coup, right? Exactly.
And then also, like, Trump's lawyers were so fucking freaked out about the insurrection that they thought he was going to get arrested that night, which he should have.
Yep.
And it's just like, it's just the thing about like this, though, and this book, and there's just going to be no accountability by the Democrats.
Right. Oh, exactly. I mean, you can count on that for sure.
I mean, and it's amazing how like motherfucker tried to overthrow an election and you're just not going to hold them accountable.
No, look, this is where this kind of like, you know, this like,
because I mean, at this point, it feels like the commission's just performative politics.
Yeah.
Because like, that's what should be done. But like, this should have happened like a month after the. It should not have taken 6 months for a commission to get together on this.
No, and this is where like this American exceptionalism stuff stands in our way, because we think like, oh, yeah, I know, and other places that, you know, that moves like this that we've seen has led to kind of like the withering away or the destruction or the overthrow of democratic regimes. I understand that, but we're America, so that's not going to happen, you know?
Yeah, so.
Anyway, so yeah, so there's a fun. So that's the fun. So like, look, we're not gonna go too deep down in there. I had the same feeling you had about the, you know, the Trump stuff that was coming out. I mean, it was more like I would not read more than a paragraph into stories on it, because I was just like, you know what? I really, in the absence of some real moves towards accountability and prosecution and kind of reckoning about for the state of our democracy, I could care less about like the inner workings. I'm going to read that book, though, by the way, because I think I've been waiting for books like this that are actually getting into some of the background and things like this, because I just think it, as a narrative, is a part of the story. But it's, you know, I mean, I'm not going to get involved with that stuff, because like, I think we need to be focused on some other things right now other than Trump. Right. But you know,
and also, doesn't... I mean, the exact opposite has happened in the 6 months since like the insurrection. Like all the pundits like, oh, well, maybe now like the Republican Party will really just like,
that's what I mean. I mean, it's like,
it's just like
now they realize what their inaction has done. Mitch McConnell's now going to see the what? Come on. So really, like, people? Seriously? Come on.
And it's just like, there's now reports like coming out that like the Republican Party is now more emboldened with their support of Trump.
Absolutely.
Now, today than they were like 6 months ago.
Absolutely. What? Look, Sean, you saw it, right? Right after the insurrection, right? I do believe that a bunch of Republicans were kind of like jolted, right? For a moment, right? And they were legitimately scared because it was themselves, right? That's the only reason, right? But they were legitimately scared. Holy crap! What did we release? And then within probably a week, right, they made the calculations, and then boop. And once you make the calculation, we've talked about this kind of process over and again. Once you make the calculation that you're gonna go with the extremes, right? You're gonna go with the big lie. You're gonna go with these things. Then you know.
I mean, he's just a vehicle for them at this point.
No, that's like, it. He's they're all in. I mean, they're all in on this. They're all in on it, and they are completely like separated from all kind of fact-based like world right now. It doesn't even freaking matter. They've got their own media infrastructure. They got their organization thing. And for anybody who thinks that they're going to go away and the rational Republican is going to return, is just telling themselves a bedtime story. So just go to sleep, right, and then let the rest of us kind of deal with it, because that is unhelpful at this point.
Can we continue this on after the break?
Yeah, let's do that after the break.
Because I got things I got to say about Mastriano and Grove.
Oh, just dandy. All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Yes, it is our freewheeling kind of Friday news roundup. Sean and I are back from vacation and ready to roll. You can help support this show and everything else we got going on by going to patreon.com/rcpress and becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day fatalities on Bloody Thursday touched off a four-day general strike in San Francisco. It was the first time a general strike had shut down a major U.S. port city. The strike had been raging since May. Workers battled with police days earlier as the shipping bosses tried to force open the docks that saw two workers killed. More than 40,000 poured into Market Street to march silently in their funeral procession. Outrage fueled plans for a general strike. 21 unions across the city voted to walk. In his book, Strike, Jeremy Brecker notes the momentum for a general strike was unstoppable, despite attempts by AFL leaders to prevent it. By 8 a.m. on this day, the San Francisco general strike had begun. Over 150,000 workers, including Teamsters and butchers, restaurant and transit workers, joined longshoremen and seafarers in shutting down the ports, the city, and the highways. But as Brecker points out, the strike was met with a powerful counterattack. hundreds of special deputies were sworn in. The National Guard was called out, complete with infantry, machine guns, tanks, and artillery units. State officials were poised on the edge of declaring martial law. Vigilante raids began on the 17th with assaults on the Marine Workers Industrial Union and the offices of the Western Worker newspaper and strike bulletin. Many other gathering places and homes where workers regularly met were also busted up. Hundreds were rounded up, beaten, and arrested. The city's Central Labor Committee authorized exceptions that eroded the strike's power. In the face of the violent raids and opposition from AFL leaders, the General Strike Committee voted to end the strike.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Kev Mone, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Welcome back. Welcome back. Sorry for that little sound glitch right there. We're just going to get right back into it. Sean, away you go.
Okay, so I wanted to, like, talk about what we were building on upon, like, before the break. Like, and this also goes back into what we were saying earlier. Like, so, like, these people, like, they all, the whole Republican Party, those are getting arrested. Those who went along with the big lie and, like, those who, like, are pushing all these voting rights bills, they just don't give a fuck. Like, they just don't. They, like, and that's what we're, like, and it's just been interesting seeing, like Seth Grove, you know, we pretty much, like, threatened to put, he made a threat to put voting rights restrictions on the ballot in 2023 in order to steal the election for 2024 for Trump, in order to change the constitutional amendment. Like, so now we're gonna have to deal with this for the next 2 years, you know, to make that law. You have Mastriano, who is going around with his, like, sham fucking, like, what his expeditions looking for bamboo paper, like, bamboo printing machines around here. Like, I don't know. I mean, they all just don't give a fuck.
Right.
And it's just, like, it's just amazing how, like, the media still hasn't picked up on that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, just seeing these reports and all, and I'm just shocked that the Republicans are, like, just, like, insulating themselves and just tightening their grip even further and further, and, like, hardening, like restricting, yep, more, like, it's like that snake, like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, and it's just like,
well, I do have to say, I think that Chris Hayes, in terms of the national cable news media, is he's been staying on this, right? And even Rachel Maddow's picking up on a little bit, and I might be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure that he basically made reference to your guys' work on this week's show. He went and tracked, like, was talking about what Mastriano did, was talking about how that he was funded buses that went down the insurrection, and made reference to stuff that, you know, we've been talking about on the show now for a while. So it seems like people are starting to pay more attention to this, at least in some circles. And that's good news. I think the New Yorker story really was super helpful in terms of getting, like, pointing to some stuff, what's going on. And they had who was on the show? Oh yeah. Will Bunch. That's part of it. Will Bunch was on the show. And what was it? I might be all confused. I mean, this might've been on the Majority Report that he was on. But Will Bunch was saying, he had a great article about it this week. He said, look, every Pennsylvania has switches from Democratic to Republican every election cycle, right? After, you know, you have a Democrat goes through for their two terms of governor, and when they're done, when it's open, it switches parties. That's been the historical trend. So if we're to follow the historical trend right now, again, I don't mean to suggest that this is a fate of nature, right, or something active nature, but we're to follow that historical trend, we're going to shift to Republicans. And if Mastriano is the one who's kind of up in front, that's super, super dangerous.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about, like, the historical trends, like, with that, because the Democrats overcame that with Corbett 4 years ago,
yep,
or 8 years ago. But, yep, like, you know, I'm more or less concerned about the Democrats. You don't lose elections through like historical trends. I think you lose elections through, like, fucking things up in the moment. And Democrats have a really good propensity of fucking things up. And I just hope that, like, you know, like,
I think that was Bunch's point. I think more he was saying that more for the fact of like, don't be stupid, people.
Right? I mean, we're seeing like two contrasting messages coming right now, between this with the two statewide candidates. You know, Josh Shapiro is one, and then with Fetterman. Fetterman went on Ali Velshi over the weekend, talk about Mastriano, and pretty much just called Mastriano a joke. This is nothing to worry about.
That is the wrong thing to be talking about.
And that, like, he's not the sharpest tool in the GOP shed, and that, like, people aren't really taking this seriously. Like, I don't know. He, like very vague, like, people aren't taking this seriously. Like, who's not taking this seriously? Because, like, Corman has really shown himself to not be a leader in the face of Wagner. When they kicked out Pileggi in favor of Corman, he let the Republican caucus run rampant, and he just never had control of the crazy caucus. And now, like, the crazy caucus in the Republican Senate has grown tremendously over the past 2 years with Mastriano, Dush, like, people getting in office who are replacing, like, very conservative Republicans, but also Republicans who towed the party line. Where, like, these are Republicans who will not toe that line. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, just complete loose cannons. And you're going to tell me that, like, people aren't taking him seriously, or that people are just, like, you know what I mean? Or, yep. Like, this is a joke?
Yep.
Like, he compared it to, like, saying, yeah, it's like me using my letterhead and sending a subpoena over to the Pittsburgh Steelers to start me at left tackle. Like, he fucking said that on Velshi. Like, and just... Going down like the Chief Wiggum or Barb Brady route, saying nothing to see here, folks, just nothing to see, like almost like that, like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And then like Shapiro goes on, which I am not a Shapiro fan by any stretch of the imagination, but he said, like, no, basically saying, like, no, our democracy at stake. These people are undermining our democracy, and that this person is the leading candidate for governor in 2 years, like. And you're damn right we're going to fight this every step of the way. Like, it's just two very contrasting messages on Mastriano from, like, you know, Shapiro and then Fetterman, where, like, I think Fetterman should know better at this point.
Yeah. I agree. If
you're not going to, like, take softballs, and I don't know. Like, I think, like, ridicule and just saying, oh, this can't happen here.
Like, that's what I mean. That's the other side of that American exceptionalism stuff, right? That's the idea that, like, oh, how are we just going to kind of joke about it instead of taking it deadly seriously? Like, you can't, I mean, like, you can't, on the one hand, talk about this as a serious threat and then to be like, oh, whatever, you know, this is just
and, like, nonsense. Also, Fetterman comes from a class of people that won't be affected by a, like, comes from a group of people, a section of the population that has money, that has wealth, and that won't be negatively impacted by a Mastriano or a Republican right-wing government.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that also...
I mean, it's like, look, I understand the impulse of about ridicule, about how crazy... Because, look, these people are...
Are fucking nuts.
They're, like, out of it.
I'm not going to, like, be the first one to tell you that. Like, I've been saying this for the past year, like, after going to all these rallies. Like,
right.
These people are not operating in the same, like, playing field as, like, everyone else.
Right, exactly.
But they're dangerous, too. And yeah, just, exactly. Like, we saw what they did. Like, yeah. And it's just, like, it's just been, like, no one really standing up to Mastriano until this point. Governor Wolf had a point to say, no, he should resign. He should be expelled. And passed and whiffed on that. Like, yep. There's just been, like, and, yeah. But...
Crazy, man. Well, at least they're having good rallies. I guess that's it.
Yes. there was a cross burning on the Capitol steps.
Nice.
On Wednesday.
Nice.
Good
old school Klan stuff. Good. There you go.
I got a couple of sound drops from this. Like, they were just like, oh, man. I actually have to pull up the fucking quote for this. Like, so there was a rally on the critical response theory.
Critical race theory.
critical race theory. Sorry, there is a rally against critical race theory. I think it just shows you the how these this is all getting astroturfed by the right wing.
Right.
Right. There was a FreedomWorks representative there. There was a Heritage Foundation representative there. The person from Freedom, the FreedomWorks, was handing out signs. They had FreedomWorks signs there. Like, someone was holding FreedomWorks sign. Like, your typical, like, right-wing AstroTurf bullshit. We're seeing the same thing we saw 10 years ago with the ACA town halls and the Tea Party attacking, you know, the town, the politicians in town halls. We're now seeing that directed towards school boards. So these are actively recruiting people to go to school boards, yell at school board members, harass school board members, and then get, and then to focus on school board elections. So groups like No Left Turn in Education, one of the people who sits on that is that crazy fucking sheriff from, you know what I mean? Like, this.
I mean, seriously.
You have, so there's at least like some, like, you know, colored representation here against critical race theory. Like, but no, you have her, you have this group, No Left Turn Education, the FreedomWorks. They've been co-opting these rallies against critical race theory all across the country, you know, just doing like some research on it. But it you see them doing the same plan, the same like playbook from the Tea Party 10 years ago with
exactly.
FreedomWorks, and it's the same shit that's going on now with critical race theory. So they had signs that said Pennsylvania parents know best, and this woman who was speaking came up from Florida with a nice southern twang holding a sign. Pennsylvania parents know best.
Pennsylvania, you know, can be the South again.
Well, here we go. Now, I will tell you, like, I have a verbatim quote that I had to copy down.
All right, let's hear it.
No, I'll tell you this in a second. And then she had another sign there. It says, stop racism, stop hate, stop critical race theory. So, and then, like, towards her, the end of her speech, she goes, I'm going to read this. I'm going to try not to laugh through it because, holy shit. She goes, quote, I'm going to tell you, folks, this is a twisted truth, and we have to be ahead of this message. I want you to continue to what you're doing because we're on the right side of the issue. We're on the right side of history, and continue fighting this in Pennsylvania because this isn't just about Pennsylvania. This is about the foundation of America, and we must preserve it so we can hand it over to our children. Just what Ronald Reagan said, quote, we're one generation away, end quote. That's what they're trying to do. Our children, this generation, is under attack, and they're going to take away the foundations that we've been raised on, end quote.
My God.
Saying that with a fucking southern twang.
My God. So who was she? Do you know who she was?
She was the education reform director at FreedomWorks.
Okay.
Like, of the national organization director.
Let me just add to this, just show you who these people are. When Sean's talking about, say, this organization, No Left Turn in Education, this is something from Media Matters for America. So I just want to read the first paragraph here. It's like, so No Left Turn in Education has become one of the leading groups fear-mongering about the teaching of critical race theory in schools. The group and its founder Alana Yaren Fishbein, have frequently used toxic and bigoted rhetoric on social media and right-wing media, including comparing the efforts of educators to that of Pol Pot, Vladimir Lenin, Adolf Hitler, and claiming that, quote, black bigotry towards whites, unquote, is a, quote, very real problem, unquote, complaining that, check this out, an educational video doesn't cover violence by black people, and promoting anti-LGBTQ rhetoric, such as telling people to go back to Transylvania. That is, this is who we're talking about. This grouping of people, right?
And I really like Pol Pot was first.
Pol Pot, gotta love that, right? Gotta love the Pol Pot. Gotta, you know,
a good like Pol Pot reference is like,
come on. I mean, you know,
you're digging deep.
You
dig for Pol Pot.
Gotta go for Pol Pot. Let's talk just for a second about the effects of this stuff, right? I don't want to derail. I want to get back to the rally in a second. But look, this is like from recent issue. I think it's July 11th. of the Courier Times, Bucks County Courier Times. So a recent Pennsbury board school board meeting, parents and taxpayers spent 90 minutes arguing that new racial equity policy and plan should never have been approved. And it was all about, here's it, quote, "You may not be calling it critical race theory and are discussing it as social and emotional learning, but we're not fooled," said school board candidate Jen Spillane of Yardley, right? That's the Pennsbury, right? Then in my own backyard here in the Pennridge School District, right? You got the same kind of stuff. Here it is from the same article. In neighboring Pennridge School District, where systemic racism, sexism, and inclusion have been long ongoing contentious issues, the district's diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative faces similar jeers as in other districts. Commonly referred to as a DEI, that is a diversity, equality, and inclusion initiative. The initiative is a collection of district goals to address where it may fall short, educating students regardless of race, background, or abilities. A handful of residents of the district's June 16th meeting warned against implementing critical race theory following a DEI presentation earlier in the month. Pennridge Assistant Superintendent of Secondary Education, Kathy Scheid, said critical race theory was not and will not be part of the curriculum. Yet, Hilltown resident Christine Baticki, who was running for school board, cast aspersions on the presentation for containing trigger words like culturally responsive curriculums as a way to hide critical race theory agenda. Broad concepts are being shared of the vision and goals, but we all know the devil is in the details. When implementing these things in real life, it can often lead to surprises, Baticki said. Right? This is what we're talking about. And they've acknowledged this now as being the school boards are the place. And I said this, you remember this on the show about more than a month ago now. It said this is going to be like the Tea Party. The Tea Party went to all these town hall meetings.
It was bubbling up.
This is where it's going, right? This is going to be the playbook leading into 2022. And now the fact that you've got FreedomWorks, right, and these other dark money groups that are getting behind these rallies is only evidence.
Yeah, no, like when I went to the rally the other day, Roxbury's like, "Sean, you gotta go over there." He's like, "What?" He's like, "They got FreedomWorks printing signs up there." And I'm like, "Okay."
I'm there. You don't need these rallies. Don't need to say no more.
But like the fact that she like said, "This is about the foundation of America and we must preserve it so we can hand it over to our children." Which children? The white children?
Yes, that's what they mean. That's what they mean.
Oh, it's exactly. Oh, I know that's what they mean, but like, and then had some good photos coming out of that. I like the meme I made. Did you see the meme?
I did see the meme.
How it started, how it's going. Like pretty much like retook the photo from the 1950s of like school integration and like racism with the sign, the guy holding this, people holding the signs like race mixing is communism or Marxism and just like CRT and
exactly.
Is racism and communism like or Marxism and just a bunch of old fucking white people. I mean, it's amazing like seeing these rallies pop up, and it's the same thing like from 50 years ago. It's the same fucking people.
Like, right. It's like what's like disturbing though too as well is like, you know, I'm hearkening back to what you have like Phyllis Schlafly, right? Phyllis Schlafly when kind of like carried out all the anti-abortion, what's that?
And the Eagles, her, right? She's with the Eagles, right? Or she had that group, the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, or not?
No, I don't know. No. She was the one. No, that's where they took their name from. I think she was the one who was like, you know.
I thought she was a founding member of that.
She may have been, but she was the one who let out as like the kind of the right wing, super kind of like right wing like Christian, anti feminist, right, anti abortion, all this stuff, and she led this and she kind of organized conservative women, right, against. Right, feminism and this other kind of stuff, right? And she had powerful within the right wing movement. What happening here too is you notice who the people we've been talking about is like these are a lot of kind of really right wing women who are kind of running for school board. Like, yes, there's some men that are there too as well. But what's notable, at least in the school districts, the school boards where kind of we're seeing this in Bucks County, is these are women who are not kind of like old. Right. These are not kind of grannies that are doing this. These are kind of like mothers of school kids right now.
Soccer moms. 40s,
exactly. 50s. And so that's what we're talking. And you've also seen this. There's been some reporting on this. I wasn't thinking about talking about this, so I didn't look it up for reference today. But I read some reporting on this. So it's saying this is where you see some of the biggest inroads in QAnon is among younger folks, a younger demographic, and women. right? And so, you know, this has been, and it's all mixed in with this kind of right-wing fundamentalist Christian nonsense, but, and white supremacy, of course, you know, got to have the white supremacy. Really, this is all about white supremacy, with all these kind of nice little flavors thrown in. But this is really serious stuff.
Yeah. And then also with, like I said it before, I mean, a lot of these rallies, what was more surprising going to these rallies over the past year, how many younger people were showing up?
Yep.
Like in their 20s and 30s. So, like, and how much of a problem that is.
Yeah. You know what? And it's like, there's certain... I don't want to go into the wax philosophical here, kind of too much, but there's like, you know, this is something that you and I have talked a lot about how the left really needs to be prepared, like, and progressives, the broad left, right, need to be more prepared to be like, you know, throwing punches here, right? That instead of playing again, this playing nice shit ain't cutting it, right? I mean, it's the same kind of, and I think that's true, but there are things that we just can't, that you cannot do what the right wing does, right? And that's what I mean. But I don't mean that as a warning. I mean that as like, look, a lot of the inroads for these folks, for younger folks, are just these like off the wall conspiracy theories, right? That require like severing like your line to like reality, and then inhabiting this separate other world of like special inclusion or something like this. And like that's their pathway in.
The anti-vax death toll, like the death toll of the anti-vaxxers going on. The fucking baseball. The fact that Major League Baseball is fucking canceling games after the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Like everyone that goes into a fucking stadium has to be vaccinated or wear a mask, besides the ball players. And it's like we're a year and a half into this, and you fuckers are causing an outbreak in your own league.
Yep.
Because of the fucking conspiracy theories and stuff like that.
Right. Well, I think, look, I think this is, we really need to think hard about, like, you know, like where the safest places are. And I think we should start going there. Like, for example, I know right now, Tennessee is now by far the safest place because they just fired their woman who was ahead of their vaccine control stuff and have forbid anyone from even talking to kids about vaccines. So it must be fine. I mean, did you see that story this week?
I saw that they canceled. I didn't look yet.
It was insane, Sean. They went like this. There was a few kind of like, you know, fringe cases of doctors who were contacting the Department of Health and say, look, we've had some, you know, minors approach us about wanting to get vaccines. Their parents don't want them to get vaccines, but they're scared. But they're like 16 or 17 years old or something like this. Right. And we don't know what to do, right? And so they reached out for advice. So this woman who's ahead of the Tennessee's vaccine, I'm forgetting her name right now, but head of the Tennessee's vaccine program, reaches out to the state, right? The, you know, Republican dominated state, and asked the legal, well, what, you know, how do we handle this? Like, what is this? So they looked up some legal history, right? And what this, and there was a case and there was precedent before when during the AIDS epidemic, right, that they had to kind of settle this, and they came up with this policy and what was the legal standing of this. And they said, no, look, children of 14 and above, right, can go and seek out medical care without their parents' permission, right? And then given that this is a vaccine and the same concept, this would be what would do. So this woman takes it, right, and sends it out to these doctors, say, okay, here's the answer to your question. It sends up this firestorm, right, of all these folks. And so they get rid of her. Right. They fire her from her job, or they basically ask her to resign or fire her. She says, no, you're going to have to fire me. I'm not going to resign because I didn't do anything wrong. Right. And what's the end? But not only do they say they pass it, say you are no longer allowed to talk to kids about getting the vaccine, right, without the parents' consent. They ban the Department of Health from talking to kids about any vaccines, not just none. Right. So, I mean, that's kind of where we're at. So anyways, that's kind of gets us sidetracked a little bit here. But yeah, I mean, it's been crazy. It's all throughout the South in Missouri, Mississippi. I mean, this is pretty crazy.
Yeah, we're going to have a fourth wave.
Yeah, we're in it already. I mean, you see this like where is it? Not St. Louis, but in Springfield. Springfield?
I didn't see that.
Oh, they've already hit capacity on hospital beds.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, it's just been pretty nuts.
And no one was wearing masks. There were no mask mandates. Like, yeah, we got we hit this one guy. Yeah, just like we're waiting to get like barbecue in Nashville. And we're literally standing across from where the Lorraine Motel where King was assassinated. Like, and this guy's like, you know, I'm from Texas. We don't do masks in Texas. And then just like start like just talking all this fucking bullshit and just like about like, you know, if they would have just like we could have saved millions of lives if we just kept on going forward with the hydroxychloroquine. Like,
I mean, seriously, what do you do with these folks? I mean, seriously, I mean, I really mean that. I mean, because I don't think there's I don't think it's worth talking. I mean,
yeah, like just saying some of this dumb shit, just like. He's like, I was down here when Martin Luther King was shot, saw the riots and all that, and then just said, like, and they went along the ways, like, yeah, and then BLM, they burnt down all the restaurants last year. And it's just like, no, they fucking didn't.
Yeah.
It's just like, yep. I'm standing here just biting my tongue, like, this motherfucker.
I got to
like,
say, the only thing that's missing from that story, though, is when is it should have gone like this. I wish it had gone like this. So like, I'm from Texas, and we don't do that mask thing down here.
You know, I mean, that's, not no, that that's, you just wear a bunch funny. Of hoods.
Right, exactly. We put a hood on instead of a mask.
Who needs masks when you have hoods?
Right, and it's a you know, and I hate yeah, whatever. I could go on and on. All right, before we go too on for the, I gotta just I'm not gonna I promise you, Sean, I'm not gonna go into extensive stuff about this, but I did talk about this on the Monday show. Cyril and I talked about this briefly on Wednesday. I'm gonna look to have somebody on the show on Out to Coop Live on Monday to talk about the Pashi consolidation vote. If you have not heard already, the Board of Governors unanimously approved the plan to merge 6 of the Pashi universities into 2. Right.
Nice.
And already in some internal memos, they have they've been referring to some of the campuses as branch campuses, right? As lead campuses. That you have Bashar Hanna, for example, who was the university president at Bloomsburg and then got appointed the interim president at Lockhaven after that president left. And now he's also the interim president at Mansfield. He's now the lead president, right? So that's how they're kind of setting this stuff up. And I wish I could get somebody to come on and talk about Bashar Hanna. The fact that he's the guy who's leading this all of that, but there's nobody want to talk about that history.
He was on the campaign, the transition team for Stacey Garrity, which I thought was interesting.
Hmm. Well, he was also kind of had to kind of leave Kutztown, and then he had to leave some other places too as well. Got glowing recommendations because they were afraid of what some consequences if they kind of let people know what was going on. So we don't know exactly what's going on. But I know I have friends who felt very uncomfortable in his presence. Let me just put it that way. But he's going to be, he's going to be the guy, right, that they've tapped. And those concerns that I'm raising here, I think were raised much more explicitly to actually to the chancellor's office, who seemed to not to want to bat an eye at it, called it all kind of hysteria and all that kind of stuff and whatever. Okay, go for it. But that's really beside the point. So they went ahead with the vote. There were, I couldn't even listen to them all because I had other things I had to get done, but I listened to the comments. And I think there was of the multiple comments, it went on for 90 minutes, maybe less than that. But I mean, there was comment, a kind of resistance to this stuff. If there's been a public comment period where people could write in, the vast majority, like in the 90%, were all things from students, from families, from community members, from faculty, from staff members, all negative about this stuff. A few of them were positive. Despite this, they were going forward. They had a student survey that they included in the final report because there was nothing, because they kept on talking about students have been consulted. And then you had multiple kind of state legislators were saying, well, where is it? This is kind of incomplete. Right, that you should have. You say you're referring to student stuff. Where's the data? You said you're the data guy. Where's the data? So, to their credit, they put the data in for the student whatever that they were doing. And the response rate was pretty impressive. You know, they had students, potential students or incoming students. There was a 1% response rate. And for existing students, there was a 4% response rate. So if you know anything about statistical measures, that is like means nothing. It's because you cannot draw any conclusions from like such a pitiful response rate such as that. Right. And yet that's the data that they're including and kind of going on. Right. So it doesn't matter. It's like at that point, it's irrelevant what's said. Right. Doesn't say. And again, I haven't read all the responses yet. We'll get more into this. And when we talk about this on Monday, but, you know, that's where it is. But most notable, there were two objections, right? People that raised concerns. There was Judy Swank, State Senator Judy Swank, and I'm forgetting the guy's name, Tim something or other, raised some concern. But in the end, they voted. They voted in favor of the plan to move forward. And, you know, the other thing that's notable about this, if you remember, we talked about this on the show. We had people on to talk about this. We had the Perry Report, which was the economic independent economic analysis about what the impact is going to be of the consolidations of these schools. And we saw that there's going to be, you know, tens of thousands of jobs lost, right? Or I'm sorry, not tens of thousands, thousands of jobs lost. I think it's over 2,000 jobs off air. That is comparable to large plant closings in Pennsylvania, right? That's how they measured it. They basically compared it to where else have we seen the kind of impact on a community of that will be similar to this. And they said the only other comparison you have is large plants that are closing in communities. It's going to have a huge negative impact upon not only just employment within the state system of higher education, but also in the communities in which they're employed. They went through in that report, the chancellor's office kind of dismissed this as kind of like, this is kind of like whatever these are, you know, this is, they don't know what they're talking about or all this. So there were two additional economic analysis that were included in this latest round, these updates, and they came to the same conclusions as the Perry Report. Despite that, negative impacts on the communities, negative impacts on students, negative impacts on jobs, they went ahead and did it anyways, unanimously, right? So the big question now is where we go from here. You know, Cyril and I talked about this on the before the show. He said, "Well, what do you think is going to happen?" Because we were getting ready to record the hearing was going on, and they hadn't taken a vote yet. I'm like, "Oh, they're going to approve it." Governor Wolf came out full throated in support of the plan. And once Governor Wolf came out full throated in support of that plan, we're done. Right. That's what I knew. When he came out and basically said, "Oh yeah, this is good. We got to do this. We got to do this." Blah 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 blah. Whatever you said, he's the guy. ABSCUF, right? Was the first. That's the faculty union. We were the first union to support Tom Wolf in the primary. His first.
He shunned everyone in the process of this.
Yep.
Didn't speak to a single person.
Yep.
Pretty much.
So there you go. You know, again, this is why, you know, that this was included in part of our, you know, this playing nice shit ain't cutting it anymore. Because here you go. This, if you talk about, you know, a union that got out in front in support of Governor Wolf or Tom Wolf when he was running, like for governor, campaigned for him, door knocked for him, raised money for him. Right. And this is the thanks, right? You know, so that whole idea that you kind of support a candidate, you get your issues out there and all this kind of stuff. This is the best example, I think, that we can see, right, about where that just, at least in the Pashi instance, where this is, you know, bullshit. It's just not working. Right. I mean, you know, this is done. So what's going to happen now? They say it's going to be a 3-year transition process that they kind of lengthened out the period of time. Organizing's got to happen. And I, you know, I've been reaching out slowly to people that, you know, and I'll put this out to everybody who's listening to us today. If you know, and I'm not interested in hearing mealy mouth, like discussions of like what happened. Oh, this is unfortunate, blah, blah, blah. I'm talk to activists and organizers and people that are kind of like, you know that we need like a much more kind of militant response moving forward. I want to bring some folks to talk about this on the show on Monday. Hopefully we'll be able to book them on Monday. And we'll see it from there. But I don't want to talk too much more about it there. But I'm just saying, I, you know, Sean, I think that beyond just what's going on with Pashi, right? I'm speaking now as kind of a union member. Like, I'm concerned about what this even does to our union. Because basically what this shows, right, is that they're going to run us over. And unless there are consequences for their actions, right, that is, now they know they can do it. Like, when we struck in 2016, they never thought we were going to do it. They thought they were going to run right over with all their little kind of, like, you know, destructive plans. And we said no. This time, we said, well, we're going to be part of the process.
It's amazing how much, like, MASH and others in the union really squandered a strike. And I'm saying that I interned it.
Yeah.
Like, I worked there with Dr. Hicks as president and Ken MASH as vice president. But, like, you know, it's just amazing seeing how that whole process, like, just squandered a strike. I mean, I have friends who work there, like, you know, I'm close to people who work there still. So, but yeah, I'm just, that's all I have to say. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, I mean, these are also issues that we work on with work, but it's just like, it's just amazing. Like, Democrats did nothing. This was a performative stunt the whole entire time. Governor Wolf said absolutely nothing to no one until minutes, probably like minutes before the vote, when pointing out that release or whatever. But, like, yeah, I mean, Governor Wolf's going to be known as the governor that went along and destroyed public higher education. Like, is Schwer on the Board of Governors? Or no? Is
he no.
Constituent rep?
He's on the education committee, I believe, too, as well. No, Schwank is, like, you know, she represents Kutztown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, like, you also have, like, you have Democrats like Judy Schwank, you know, for instance, who, you know, doesn't want to ruffle any feathers, doesn't want to rock the boat.
Yep.
Like, she said that, you know, she defended the child prisons up in Burke's detention center a couple of years ago with the immigration center up there. Like, this isn't surprising. But, like, this ultimately falls on Governor Wolf, though. I mean, he hired the person who, as Schwer said, he came in and did nothing to advocate for the state system of higher education. Like, he's using this as a way to get some job at some fancy, like, fucking think tank somewhere. And Wolf just gave him the green light to do this.
Yep, exactly.
And that was it.
And if you watch the hearing...
And Wolf just didn't care.
Yes. And if you watch the hearing, I'll tell you this. This is, you know, again, this is the last thing I'm going to say. I'm going to force myself to say this is the last thing I'm going to say. If you watch any of the hearings, anybody watch the hearings, you listen to Chancellor Greenstein talk, right? And this was then, like, rehearsed and repeated, like, verbatim from Cynthia Shapira, who's the chair of the Board of Governors, and Judy Schwank, and a bunch of other people basically talk about this is this huge opportunity. This is going to break new ground in public higher education. This is going to be set the tone for the next year. And I've said this over and over again. When he came and was hired at Kutztown, I'm sorry, hired at Pashi, and went on his little tour of all the campuses. I put up a video of this on our YouTube channel, where he basically told everybody there, look, he didn't come here by accident, right? He went shopping. He went shopping for a place where he could do this. So what's he going to do with it? You think that this is his end game, that he wanted to be the chancellor of this state system, and that's what he wants to retire from? No. He's going to use this to shop this now around state by state. This exactly. And, you know, who knows? I would love to see if there's any ABSCUF members who end up kind of like moving over to his, his new think tank that I'm sure he's going to launch one of these days. Or if there's going to be co-written pieces about the process of transformation, right? And I'm just waiting. Like, I'm just waiting for that. I'm saying that because not that I know anything, but because I feel something like that is about to take place. But whatever. So we'll talk more about that on Monday, and hopefully we're going to get a couple of guests that are going to come on, and if not, you're just going to hear from my loud mouth that will kind of drill down into some stuff, and we'll do some sound. So we'll see from there. But it's quite a day, Sean, I have to say.
Yep.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to go on to this week's fun half, everybody. Woo! Yeah, who knows what we're going to
unboxing.
Yeah, we're actually going to return to some beer stuff today, which would be kind of cool. But I want to remind you once again that you become a patron of this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Support the show. Just like good beer once a month. You can kind of hit us up. Go to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron. Help support this show. We'll be back right after this with this week's Last Call. See you in a minute. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody. It's Kevin Mahoney here again once with Sean Kitchen for this week's Last Call, where we talk beer news, fun news, going in and out of focus in front of the camera. here we go. So today, just one thing. I mentioned this a few weeks back. I talked about this browser plugin called DuckDuckGo. Right. And it's a Chester County based, I believe, Chester County or Delaware County, one of there. But Pennsylvania based company outside Philadelphia. And it was launched by this guy who kind of made a bunch of change from some sort of app that he developed while he was at MIT. Used that money, sold that company, used that money to start this browser he's in. And it's a browser that claims to kind of protect your Chesco, Nick says. Thank you, Nick. It's a browser that basically claims it protects your personal data. I'll just give you, this is kind of like how they pitch to this. Their mission is to show the world that protecting privacy is simple. For over a decade, to create a new technology worker policymakers to make online privacy simple and accessible for all. DuckDuckGo, they do not store your data. They do not kind of use it to kind of sell it to other people. And it allows you to an easy way, just like this one little button that you hit, and it kind of like flames it all out if you're doing it on your mobile app. But if you're using the Chrome browser and using that plugin, DuckDuckGo, you'll notice that it'll come up and shows you the sites that are trying to collect your data at that point and that how it's getting blocked. One, I first came across this because there was a story, and this is what I reported on the show, about how they are launching a desktop browser. Right now it's a Chrome plugin, but they're getting ready to launch a desktop browser. He's testified in front of Congress several times about privacy issues, about the need to break up big tech, and all a bunch of stuff like this. I started using it, and the speed of my browsing and my internet connection through Chrome increased like exponentially. I couldn't believe it. I was like, it was shocking to me. I told my son about it. I said, look, maybe this is just me. You try it out. He's like, whoa. Right. He was thrilled about it. So here's what I'm curious. If there's anybody out there who's using DuckDuckGo who knows more about it than I do, knows about some of the background and some about this guy's history and things like this. I'd love to hear more about it. You can hit me up at RagingChickenPress at gmail.com, or hit us up on our Monday show in the last part of the in the call-in section. Remember, on our Monday show now, we're basically going to do the first 45 minutes of the show are going to be the kind of the interview kind of a portion of it, and then we're going to open up for calls during the last 15 minutes. If you want to know more about that, you can tune in on Monday. I'll tell you, I'll kind of remind everybody. I talked about it in this past Monday show. So there's that. I just would love to get people's perspectives on it, because, you know, this privacy stuff, you know how this cuts. There's groups that are concerned about it from a kind of monopoly perspective, from a, you know, surveillance perspective, as Cory Doctorow is about surveillance capitalism, so on. But there's also some kind of really kind of like crazy libertarians that are really interested in this stuff. And so before I start kind of like promoting this too much, right, I'd really like to know what people know about the company, about this guy, his background, and what their experiences are with the browser. Because I've just, I've actually really loved using it. And I just want to find out more before I kind of go even more. Anyways, just want to throw that out there for the community. I want to say there's this, for those folks watching on YouTube right now, you'll notice this right here. This is the Brave Noise Pale Ale from Notch Brewing, right? You remember me talking about this. This is the Notch Brewing is, of course, where Brienne Allen is from. Brienne Allen was the woman who's, she's a brewer at at Notch Brewing. She put up that Instagram post that said, anybody else experiencing this kind of sexism in the craft beer industry? And it exploded. And that has kind of moved into this, the latest round of a reckoning in the craft beer industry about their legacy of misogyny, of sexism, anti-racism, not anti-racism, but racism, and a whole sorts of kind of problematic aspects of a toxic culture there. And we've seen different breweries have been stepping up and basically saying, we are going to be part of a collaboration with folks to kind of end this now. And at the other breweries, we've seen kind of, the heads of the company, lead brewers, managers, whatever like this, get fired, right? Being forced out by their employees as they're being exposed for their history of sexism and sexual abuse that are taking place within the industry. So anyways, I want to put this out. So this Brave Noise, the reason why I wanted to kind of show you the can, this is what it kind of looks like. Notch Brewing went through a process and they launched a this new thing called the Brave Noise Collaborative. And basically they're using this as a way of kind of build these collaborations with breweries all over the country and the world, actually. It's a global collaborative. And their single goal is a safe, discrimination-free beer industry. I'll read this from Brave Noise is advocating for safe spaces and inclusive environments by requesting breweries be transparent with their policies and commitment to long-term work, right? They are out there kind of promoting this. There's interviews on this. There'll be a link in the show notes. They're going to start seeing. So there's three different things you can do if you're a brewery, right? This is a collaborative effort to provide inclusive and safe environments for women. You're going to brewing this beer alongside the folks at Notch. You're standing in solidarity with those folks who shared stories. So they're asking people, look, if you're a brewery, you want to get involved with this collaborative, you want to help raise money and making sure these codes of conduct are kind of part of the brewing industry, join in this and take part in this. There's a section for home brewers, right? If you're a home brewer and you want to find out kind of ways that you can help kind of be part of this, they've got a link there. And for beer drinkers like me, right, about how you can kind of help out and how you can actually support having these kind of inclusive anti-sex. This is why I got this t-shirt, right? Anti-sexist, anti-racist, pro-equality beer club out of New York City. And how we can actually kind of take a stand as a community. People who love craft beer kind of love the idea that you're kind of supporting the community, but also are absolutely 100% intolerant of sexism, misogyny, racism, and abuse in the industry. So great news from there. And connected with that, there's this, the shirt that I have on right now is actually a New York City one. The original shirt came from out of San Diego. And that is a... the San Diego shirts called the same kind of stuff was there to support Brianna Allen's legal defense, because now you have some breweries, instead of saying, okay, we need to stop this in industry, are deciding they're going to go out and kind of like, you know, go after her. So they started this. Let me see if I can just pull this up real quick. Here we go. oh, it didn't show up. Give me one more second. And let me find this one article, and then we're going to go here. No, it's not going to come up. Anyways, the so I'll have this. I'll have the link that's put in there, and basically has a link to where you can get a T-shirt, right? That'll help support Breonna Allen's legal defense stuff. The one that I have right now, which has this on the front thing, is comes out of New York City. I couldn't find the link before the show, but I'll look for it again after the show to try to put in the show notes. I will have the link in there that'll go to the original one out of San Diego. So not only, you know, so something small to do, but you know, I'm looking at this as like, I love the fact that I can wear this when I go to Free Will, if I'm going to go pick up some beer there or something like this, I got, you know, I'll have this shirt on, which would be great. Other kind of quick things before we get into the long-awaited unboxing that Sean has been dying to get into. One, billionaires in space. Yes, Richard Branson, Sir Richard Branson, kind of flew up there with a little Virgin Galactic to beat out Jeff Bezos, as we've seen the kind of billionaire playboys, whatever, make their way for their space play. We'll have more on that in the coming days, because it's, or coming weeks, it's going to be a thrill for me to talk about that. And Sean, I got to say, so in this little bottle right here, I've been doing cold brew, right? Coffee, right? So
making your own, or
I'm making my own. You bet.
Nice.
I came across there's this great little, this little device, right? It's called Rumble, like Rumble something, right? It's like an insert you use in just kind of ball jars, right? And, you know, normally you go through the I've been wanting to do this for a while, but when I was looking at, okay, what's the best way to do this? It's like, you need this, and there's all these different things. I'm like, I don't want to, like, find more stuff that I have to friggin' store. And I came across this thing. It was called Rumble. It's like a little cylinder with these kind of micro perforations in it that you just kind of put it, you stick it in a ball jar, you kind of turn it upside down a few times, you stick it in the fridge for an hour or for a day, right? And come out with it. You build that concentrate and kind of come out with it. So I've been doing it now for a couple weeks, and I tell you, I'm loving it. It's nice. It's pretty freaking awesome. So I'm on the cold brew ticket, and I'll have more to say about that in there. And I was really psyched to as well. It's like, you know, Just Coffee is their sponsor of the Majority Report and stuff like that. It's where I order a lot of my coffee from, and some local roasters too as well. But Just Coffee, they started producing just the kind of cold brew, special brew. So I bought a bag of that. I've been kind of using that, grinding that, and kind of using it, and it's been mwah. So shout out to those folks at Just Coffee too as well, and the folks at Rumble for producing a great way of making it really super easy to do your own cold brew. So there you go. That's what I got this week, Sean.
Nice. I guess before we open up this box, I would say, like, I am getting myself into more video production stuff. I think I'm going to try to do that this year. Spend the summer messing around doing that because there's nothing else going on. Republicans are out. You know, legislature's out until September 20th. So I figured I got a few months to teach myself some new video things. So I bought a gimbal this week, which is going to be really nice, which is going to be open soon. A new microphone, just a cheap microphone, shotgun mic. And then started making my own videos. Like some on using a Adobe Rush, which mm-hmm. is pretty nice. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much like a dumbed down version of Premiere, or like what Lightroom is to Photoshop. This is what Rush is to like Premiere. So made a couple of videos already this week. Mastriano at the insurrection.
It was quite good, I must say. I very much enjoyed that. I was like, when I saw it first, I have to say, when I saw it first, I'm like, oh, like, where's it from? I'm like, oh, this is Sean's video. Sean doing his video thing. This is
which
awesome.
Which one's this?
The one with Mastriano. The one you're...
Which one? The one I did the first one? Or
the first one. When the first one, you put the first one out. Yeah.
So I did the first one, the montage of him speaking. Yeah. And then it goes like...
And then it runs like...
Cops getting fucking pummeled.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I did a second one yesterday. Just a 12-second sound clip of him on that one radio interview. Saying, like, you know... I'll pull up the direct quote, but you know, it's fucking awesome just like having this stuff now and just going back and listening to it.
Yeah.
And he was like, I didn't go on the steps. No, he was right. He stayed like, he didn't go on the steps that were breached, but he was pushing part of the crowd that was like pushing the police lines back the whole entire time. He said this because this interview that we found right after the insurrection. So he said this a week after the insurrection. Because that was our case as well. We're not out there to be a lot of bad things were happening. Now, not aware how bad it got. And they, like him and his wife, like 90% of the people who showed up today didn't realize how bad things got until they were checking the news or checking their phones. And he's like, that was the same thing for us. We weren't aware of how bad things were until we left. And it's just like him saying that on the radio interview with people with the video of him walking towards the Capitol steps and then yelling, "Stop the steal" in the background.
Great. Great.
I'm going to like, people That's are really awesome. Going to hate me after like the end of the summer with these videos after they get done. Just like,
well, that's good because, you know, like, so, you know, it was like it was tough finding like the next kind of load of fuel that you could put on the Hate Sean kitchen fire. So now you got it. I'm going to tell you this. I wasn't going to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you this anyways. I've been toying with this, and I'm going to do it now because I've been doing it. I started messing around with it. I'm going to make some shirts for sales, and it's going to be "I Hate Sean Kitchen," like the "I Hate Steven Singer" thing. You
know? Don't do that.
I'm going to.
I think that's like a Philadelphia thing, right? Steven Singer.
Yeah. I had no idea what that was. Because Steven Singer's also
a jeweler.
Is he?
Yeah, Steven Singer Jewelers.
I have no idea.
It's a Philadelphia jeweler. Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was a radio person.
No, he was a jeweler, and it was just like a long-term like advertising campaign. He had "I Hate Steven Singer," and it was just like he has his fucking radio ads everywhere, and billboards in the city. Yeah.
When I first because Steven Singer is also
you would think he's a radio guy.
Well, that's what I thought. I had no idea. I see the billboards. I'm like, whatever. I don't know what that says. It's not my. But it's like, you know, Steven Singer is also the, you know, education activist teacher guy, right? Yeah. So when I first saw him, I'm like, wait a minute, this is like so disruptive to my brain. But anyways, yeah. So so I got to ask Sean, what do you got in the box? There it is, everybody. This is the first. I think this is a first Raging Chicken unboxing. Where Sean is opening up the play-by-play. He's got a letter opener. He's
oh my
not.
God, it's like,
oh, look at this! It must be important because it's got. It's. I think it's weatherproofed.
Really. I'm also like using a letter opener as a pen.
Like instead of a scissors or a knife, because, you know, again, safety first, yeah. Right? You know, we don't just
like
we got some bubble, we got some big bubbles, air pocket things. What is that? Oh, that wait, show that again. Put up, no, you're not in front of the camera. Up a little bit. Yeah, that's nice. I've got one of those. It's a little bit more of the, in the boom shape, but they're fantastic.
Yeah, this is like more of like their express mic.
Yep.
So it's the same thing, but
do you have that boom mic?
Yeah,
I thought so. Right.
It actually broke.
It broke.
It broke off the foot, the shoe.
Oh, okay.
And then I got this.
Oh, the gimbal just came.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you already got the gimbal in. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's the gimbal.
I have no reason to have a gimbal, right? You know, I cannot justify it. I have tried in my brain to say, well, this is what I need it for, but I can't. I so much want one.
Here's like my rationale with this. I was debating between the gimbal and a Steadicam, which a Steadicam. Like the gimbal has like the roll axes, but the Steadicam you just mount it onto a plate. But you have like it's large. It's almost like you're holding like a stick that counterbalances on it. So it's like that's $300 versus like $350 for a gimbal.
Yeah,
like a really good gimbal, like a prosumer, highly rated gimbal.
Yeah,
like these things do get expensive. And carried away with it. But
notice everybody, Sean used the word prosumer.
Yeah. No, but like that type of like, if you're going to be doing like the vlogging and stuff.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that,
sure.
Like, it took me a while to justify getting it. And just like the extra $50, sure.
Dude, I think, look, I
and it's
I
a lot
look
more
at
technologically better. Like, you know
yeah,
what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think it's I think it totally makes sense. I mean, look, I mean, all for all the rallies and all this kind of stuff that you go to, right? I mean, I think it makes 100% sense, right? Especially if you're going to be doing more video.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty much it, but I have to get going.
There you go, everybody. Yeah. There you go, everybody. We have Sean did the unboxing, and he has to go.
So. Sorry, I just got a couple. I ended up getting a couple quick phone calls. We can close it out.
Yeah, let's just close it out. So, hey, everybody, listen. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. It's been a week of kind of coming back from vacation and a little bit of freewheeling stuff. We're going to start getting back into our regular routine. We're going to have some cool stuff coming up on the Wednesday show with Cyril Mikulenko. That's going to be great. Of course, we'll be back here next Friday with Sean Kitchen for our Politics News Roundup. And then Monday, we're going to do our best to focus on what just happened in Poshi and have some folks on the show. It's been great hanging out, everybody. It's really, really great to be back. And I look forward to seeing y'all on Monday, hopefully. And hopefully we're going to see you throughout the week next week. Yep. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thank y'all. See ya!
Try my people.